Chapter 14. Solomon kept a close eye on the assault warriors of the Eldar delegation, their movements fluidly lethal in a way his could never be. A curving sword was sheathed across each of their backs, and they all carried delicate pistols holstered at their waists. Pale helmets of fearsome warrior aspects and scarlet plumes obscured their faces, and their smooth, segmented armour was formed of the same substance as the ruin they had seen on 28-4.
"They don't look much," whispered Marius. "A strong wind would break them in two."
"Don't underestimate them," warned Solomon. "They are deadly warriors, and their weapons are lethal."
Marius looked unconvinced, but nodded in response to his fellow captain's wisdom, for Solomon had faced the warriors of the Eldar before. He remembered fighting through the wind-lashed forests of Tsar Chau, where the Lunar Wolves and the Emperor's children had battled side by side against a piratical force of Eldar Reavers. What had started as a fairly straight-up-and-down fight had degenerated into a bloody brawl in the depths of a storm, with weapons useless and brute strength and ferocity the only tools of destruction. He remembered the shrieking horror of blades that had charged from the trees with howls that chilled the blood, and he remembered watching as one Lunar Wolf had garrotted a nameless Eldar champion with a length of dirty rusted wire in the rain. Solomon remembered the walking monstrosities, taller than a dreadnought, which had stalked the dark forest, like giants of legend, crushing Astartes in their mighty fists and destroying armoured vehicles with shoulder-mounted cannons of unimaginable power. No, thought Solomon, the Eldar were not to be underestimated. The encounter with the craft world had come as a great surprise to the 28th Expedition, and had been greeted with guarded hostility until it became clear that the Eldar had no apparent aggressive intent. Fulgrim himself had spoken to this Eldrad Ulthran, an individual who claimed to guide the craft world, though he had fallen short of claiming to be its leader. Thus began an elaborate ballet of proposal and counter-proposal, with neither side willing to allow the other upon its ships. The calls for war were strident, with Solomon's loudest of all, as he, Julius, Marius, Vespasian and Eidolon gathered in the Primarch staterooms to hear why they had not yet attacked the Eldar, as their mandate of conquest demanded. Fulgrim's quarters were a riot of paintings and sculpture, and Solomon had been quietly disconcerted to see a statue bearing his own features at the far end of the stateroom, standing next to ones of Julius and Marius.
"They are aliens," he had said. "What more reason do we need to make war upon them?"
"You heard what Lord Fulgrim said, Solomon," said Julius. "There is much we can learn from the Eldar."
"I know you don't believe that, Julius. I fought alongside you on Tsar Chau, and you know exactly what they're capable of."
"Enough," Fulgrim had shouted. "I have made my decision. I do not believe the Eldar come with hostile intent, for they are but one vessel, and we are many. They offer us friendship, and I will honour that friendship as honest, unless proven otherwise."
"When a sinister person means to be your enemy, they always start by trying to become your friend," said Solomon. "This is a sham, and they mean us ill, I know it."
"My son," said Fulgrim, taking him by the arm, "there is no man, however wise, who has not at some time in his youth said or done things that are so unpleasant to him in later life that he would gladly expunge them from his memory if he could. In years to come, I will not be haunted by the guilt of all the good I didn't do." The discussion, such as it was, had ended, and all but Eidolon and Julius had been dismissed to return to their companies.
Further communication with the Eldar had yielded no further unlocking of the impasse to a conference, until Eldrad Ulthran had offered a meeting on a world named Tarsus. Such a solution had been deemed acceptable, and the ships of the 28th Expedition had followed the craft world on a stately voyage through the Perdus region towards yet another verdant world of beauty that was as empty of life as all the others had been before it. Coordinates had been transmitted to the pride of the Emperor, and after yet more wrangling,
The size of both groups' deputations was agreed upon. A thunderhawk had brought them to the surface of Tarsus as the sun dropped towards the horizon. They had landed atop a rounded hillock on the edge of a large forest amid the ruins of what must at one time have been a stately dwelling of some description. As the clouds of their landing had dissipated, Solomon saw the Eldar were already waiting for them, though the expedition fleet had detected no shuttles or landers detaching from the craft world. Solomon felt nothing but apprehension as he stared down at the Eldar deputation. Lord Commanders Vespasian and Eidolon flanked Fulgrim, with Solomon, Julius, Marius, Saul Tarvitz, and Lucius bringing up the rear. The Eldar gathered around an arched structure, identical to the one they had seen on 28-4. A group of warriors in bone-coloured armour and high crests stood around the arch, each of them carrying a pair of long-bladed swords across their backs. Behind them, tall figures in dark plate stood sentinel with long-barrelled weapons, while a pair of hovering tanks with jutting prows circled the perimeter. The air shimmered beneath the gracefully skimming vehicles, and clouds of dust were kicked up by the mechanism that kept them in the air. At the centre of the group of Eldar, a slender figure robed in a dark tunic and wearing a high helm of bronze sat cross-legged at a low table of polished dark wood. He carried a long staff, and beside him stood one of the giant walking war machines that Solomon had dreaded ever since the battle on Tsar Chau. It carried a sword as long as an Astartes warrior was tall, and its graceful limbs belied the fearsome power and strength within it. Though the golden sweep of its curved head was completely featureless, Solomon felt sure that it was looking right at him with nothing but scorn. "Quite a gathering," whispered Julius, and Solomon heard an eager edge to his voice. Solomon said nothing, too intent on watching for the slightest hint of danger.
"You believe he is the one?"
"I do not know," said Eldrad, as the voice of Kyraian Goldhelm echoed in his mind. "And that troubles me."
"The fates are not clear?"
Eldrad shook his head, knowing the mighty Wraith Lord was uneasy at this meeting Eldrad had urged with the Monkey. The long-dead warrior's counsel had been to attack the humans as soon as they had violated Eldar space, destroying them before they even knew the Eldar were there. But Eldrad had sensed there would be something different in this encounter.
"I know that this one will be a great player in the bloody drama set to unfold, but I cannot see whether it will be for good or ill. His thoughts and future are hidden from me."
"Hidden? How is such a thing possible?"
"I do not know for sure, but I believe that whatever dark forces his emperor employed in the creation of these Primarchs renders many of them as little more than spectres in the warp. I cannot read this one, nor sense anything of his future."
"He is Monkey. He has no future but war and death."
Eldrad could sense the contempt the dead warrior had for the humans, for it had been a human blade that had ended his life and left him a ghost in the shell of a mighty war machine. He tried not to let the Wraith Lord's anger cloud his judgment of the humans, but it was difficult not to agree with him, given the evidence of their blood-soaked history. Yes, the Monki were a brutal race that lived for conquest. But these humans had behaved in a manner unlike any he had witnessed before, and he fervently hoped that this Fulgrim might be the one with the wit to bear his warning to the ruler of his race.
"You know I speak true," urged Kyraian. "You have seen it, haven't you? The great war that sets them at one another's throats."
"I have seen it, great one," nodded Eldrad.
"Then why seek to prevent it? Why should we care whether the Monki destroy one another in fire and blood? I say let them.
for the life of one Eldar is worth 10,000 of theirs.
I agree, said Eldred, but I see a time in the grim darkness of the far future when our failure to act will be our undoing.
I hope you are right, Farseer, and that this is not simply arrogance.
Eldred looked up at the armored warriors gathered on the hillside and felt a shiver within his soul, as he hoped the same thing. Fulgrim led the way down the hillside without preamble, resplendent in his battle armor and a cloak of bright gold that shone dazzlingly in the fading light. His silver hair was pulled into a number of elaborate plaits, and he wore a glittering golden wreath about his brow. Powder had been applied to his skin, rendering it even paler than normal, and colored inks had then been applied to his cheeks and eyes in elegant swirls. Fulgrim had come armed, the silver sword belted at his waist, and to Solomon's eyes his master was dressed in a manner more akin to some theatrical impresario's vision of a Primarch rather than the reality. He kept his own counsel, however, as the Emperor's children reached the bottom of the hill, and the Eldar, robed in black, rose smoothly from the ground and bowed before Fulgrim. The faint hint of a smile ghosted across the alien's features, and Solomon tensed as he removed his bronze helmet.
"Welcome to Tarsus," said the Eldar, bending at the waist in a formal bow.
"You are Eldred Ulthran?" asked Fulgrim, returning the bow.
"I am," said Eldred,
turning to face the towering war machine.
"And this is Wraithlord Kyraian Goldhelm, one of Craftworld Ulthway's most revered ancients."
Solomon shivered as the towering war machine inclined its head curtly, the gesture of welcome rendered as one of hostility. Fulgrim looked up at the giant Wraithlord and returned the gesture, a nod of respect between warriors, as Eldred spoke again.
"And from your stature, you must be Fulgrim."
"Lord Fulgrim of the Emperor's children," put in Eidolon.
Again Solomon saw the ghost of a smile, and his jaw clenched at the insult he felt sure was implicit in such a gesture.
"I apologize," said Eldred. "No disrespect or offense was intended. I simply sought to establish a dialogue based on virtue rather than rank."
"No offense is taken," assured Fulgrim. "Your point is well made, for it is not birth or rank, but virtue that makes the difference between men. My lord commanders are simply anxious that my station be recognized. Although it will make no difference to our parley, it is still unclear to me what rank you hold among your people."
"I am what is called a Farseer," said Eldred. "I guide my people through the challenges of whatever the future might hold and offer guidance as to how best to meet those challenges."
"Farseer?" said Fulgrim. "You are a witch."
Solomon's hand itched to reach for his sword, but he fought the impulse. The Primarch had expressly forbidden them to draw their weapons unless he did so first. Eldred appeared unmoved by Fulgrim's provocative word, but shook his head slightly.
"It is an ancient term, one that perhaps does not translate well into your language."
"I understand," said Fulgrim, "and I apologize for speaking without thought."
Solomon knew his Primarch better than that, and saw that Fulgrim had very deliberately chosen the word to gauge Eldred's reaction to it. Against a human counterpart, such a ploy might have worked, but the Farseer's features gave nothing away.
"So, as a Farseer, you are the Craftworld's leader?"
"Craftworld Ulthway has no formal leader as such, more a council, I suppose you would call it."
"Then do you and Kyraian Goldhelm represent that council?"
pressed Fulgrim. "I desire very much to know with whom I deal."
"Deal with me," promised Eldrad. "And you deal with Ulthwey."
Once again, Ostian rapped on the shuttered door to Serena's studio, telling himself he would give her 5 more minutes to answer before heading back to his own studio. The statue of the Emperor was coming on in leaps and bounds, as though some inner muse guided his hands, though there was still much to be done, and this visit to Serena's was taking up much needed time. He sighed as he realized that Serena wasn't going to answer. Then he heard shuffling behind the shutter and the faint but unmistakable smell of an unwashed body.
"Serena, is that you?" he asked.
"Who's that?" said a ragged and hoarse voice.
"It's me, Ostian. Open the shutter."
Silence was his only answer, and he feared that whoever the voice belonged to was simply going to ignore him. He raised his hand to knock once more when the shutter began to rattle upwards. Ostian stood back, suddenly nervous about who he might come face to face with. Eventually the shutter rose enough for him to see who had opened it. It was a woman, but one he would have expected to see hawking for loose change from the gutters of a downhive sump. Her long hair was greasy and unkempt, her features gaunt and wasted, and her clothes ragged and stained. "Who are—" he began, but the words died in his throat as he realized that this decrepit excuse for a human being was Serena Dangelus.
"Thrown alive!" cried Ostian, rushing forward to take her by the shoulders. "What's happened to you, Serena?"
He looked down at her arm, seeing scores of cuts and scars crisscrossing her flesh. Dried blood was still crusted on the more recent wounds, and even he could tell that many were infected. She looked at him with dull eyes, and he all but dragged her back into the studio, shocked at the disaster area it had become. What had happened to the meticulously neat artist who had kept every part of her life organized and compartmentalized? Paint pots were strewn all over the floor, and broken canvases lay around like so much garbage. A pair of easels still stood in the middle of the studio, but he could not see what had been painted on them, for they were facing away from him. Red stains streaked the walls, and a large plastic barrel sat in one corner of the room. Even from here, Ostian could smell the rotten, acidic reek from it.
"Serena! What in the name of all the sane has happened here?"
She looked up at him, as though seeing him for the first time, and said,
"Nothing."
"Well, clearly something has happened," he said,
his anger growing in proportion to her indifference.
"I mean, look at this place. Paint everywhere, smashed paintings, and that stench. Throne, what is that? It smells like something died in here."
Serena shrugged and said,
"I've been too busy to clean."
"Well, that's just nonsense," he said. "I was always far messier than you, and my studio's not this bad. Really, what's been going on here?"
He wandered through the smashed wreckage that filled Serena's studio, avoiding a large pool of reddish-brown paint in the middle of the floor, and making his way towards the large barrel in the corner of her studio. Before he reached it, he felt a presence behind him and turned to see Serena right behind him, one hand held poised to reach out to him, the other tucked in the folds of her dress as though holding something.
"Don't," said Serena. "Please, I don't want to..."
"Don't want to what?" asked Ostian.
"Just don't," she said,
and he could see the tears welling up in her eyes.
"What have you got in that barrel?" asked Ostian.
"It's engraver's acid," she said. I'm trying something new."
"Something new?" repeated Ostian. "Switching from acrylics to oils is something new. This is... well, I don't know what this is. But it's something insane, if you ask me."
"Please, Ostian," she sobbed. "Please go."
"Go? Not until I find out what's been happening with you."
Ostian, you have to go, begged Serena. I don't know what I might do.
What are you talking about, Serena? Asked Ostian, grabbing her by the shoulders. I don't know what's the matter with you, but I want you to know that I'm here for you. I'm an idiot and should have said something before now, but I didn't know how to. I knew you were hurting yourself because you didn't think your talent was worth anything, but you're wrong. It is. It so is. You have a rare gift, and you have to realize it because this is not healthy. She sagged into his arms, and he felt tears pricking his eyes as her body was convulsed by racking sobs. His heart went out to her, though the wiring of his male brain could not understand the strangeness of her affliction. Serena D'Angelis was one of the most talented artists he had ever seen, and yet she was tormented by delusions of her own inadequacy. He pulled her tight and kissed the top of her head. "It's all right, Serena." Without warning, she pushed him away with a shriek of rage and shouted,
"No, no, it's not all right. Nothing lasts. No matter what I do, it won't last. I think it was because he was inferior. No good. His talent wasn't able to sustain it."
Ostian recoiled from her rage, not knowing who or what she was talking about or what she meant. "Serena, please, I'm trying to help."
"I don't want your help," she cried. "I don't want anyone's help. I want to be left alone."
Utterly confused, he backed away from her, sensing on some instinctive level that he was in danger just by being there. "I don't know what's wrong with you, Serena, but it's not too late to come back from whatever's eating away at you inside. Please let me help you."
"You don't know what you're talking about, Ostian. It's always been so easy for you, hasn't it? You're a genius and inspiration comes naturally to you. I've seen you do great things without even thinking about it. But what about the rest of us? What about those of us that aren't geniuses? What do we do?"
"Is that what you think?" he asked, outraged at her dismissal of his skill, as if it was the inevitable result of some intangible force within him, spilling from him in a torrent. "You think it's easy for me? Let me tell you this, Serena, inspiration comes of working every day. People think that my talent rises each morning, rested and refreshed like the sun, but what they don't appreciate is that, like everything else, it waxes and wanes. It always seems so easy for those without talent to look on those who have it and say that it's easy for us, but it isn't. I work every day to be as good as I am, and it annoys the hell out of me when mediocre people assume an air of knowing better than I do what makes good art. Appreciation of others' work is a wonderful thing, Serena. It makes what is excellent in others belong to you as well." She backed away from him as he spoke, and he realized that he'd let his anger get the better of him. Disgusted with himself, he stormed away as she reached for him, passing through the shutter and into the corridor beyond.
"Please, Ostian," wailed Serena as he walked away. "Come back. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I need your help. Please."
But he walked on. Throughout the jockeying exchanges of greeting, Solomon had watched the motionless Wraith Lord behind the Farseer. Its slender limb seemed incapable of supporting its body and elongated golden head and curving crest. Solomon felt his skin crawl just looking at it, for though he knew such things could move with fearsome speed and agility, he felt no sense of life from the machine, as he did from a dreadnought. Even though nothing remained of the old one within a dreadnought sarcophagus, save a ruined body hung in amniotic suspension, there was still a beating heart and living brain at its core. All he could sense from this monstrous creation was death, as though whatever dwelled within was little more than a ghost somehow bound to a lifeless shell. Fulgrim nodded towards Eldrad and said,
"Very well, Eldrad Ulthran of Craftworld Ulthway, you may deal with me as a representative of the Emperor of Mankind."
Eldrad nodded graciously and gestured towards the low table.
"Sit, please, and let us talk and eat as travellers who find themselves on the same road."
"That would be pleasant," said Fulgrim, gracefully lowering himself to the ground and indicating that his captains should do the same, introducing each of them as they sat.
Solomon adjusted his sword and sat at the table as the skimming tanks pivoted smoothly in the air and a ramp lowered gently to the ground from their rears. Solomon sensed the tension in his fellow Astartes. He could almost feel the Phoenix Guard tighten their grips on their halberds. But no assault came from the interior of the vehicles, only a group of white-robed Eldar bearing platters of food. They moved with such amazing poise and grace that their feet seemed to glide across the grass towards the table. The platters were deposited, and Solomon saw that a feast had been laid before them, choice cuts of the most tender meat, fresh fruit, and pungent cheese.
"Eat," said Eldrad.
Fulgrim helped himself to meat and fruit, as did Lord Commander Vespasian, but Eidolon refrained from eating. Julius and Marius likewise helped themselves. But for once, Solomon found himself in accordance with Eidolon and took nothing from the platters. He noticed that Eldrad did not touch the meat, but ate only sparingly from a bowl of fruit.
"Does your kind not eat meat?" asked Solomon.
Eldrad turned his large oval eyes upon him, and Solomon felt as though he were a butterfly pinned to a wall. He saw great sadness in the Farseer's eyes, and reflected in their ageless depths he saw echoes of the great deeds he might yet achieve.
"I do not eat meat, Captain Demeter," said Eldrad. "It is too rich for my palate. But you should try some. I am told it is very good."
Solomon shook his head.
"No. What interests me more is why you choose now to reveal yourself to us. It is my belief that you have been shadowing us ever since we arrived here."
Fulgrim shot him an irritated glance, but Eldrad pretended not to see it.
"Since you ask, Captain Demeter, yes, we have been shadowing you. For it is a curious thing to see your ships abroad in this region of space," said Eldrad. "We had thought that it was shrouded from your kind. How is it that you managed to reach it?"
Fulgrim put down his food and said,
"You have been shadowing us."
"Merely a precaution," said Eldrad, "for the worlds you have encountered in your travels belong to the Eldar race."
"They do?"
"Indeed," confirmed Eldrad. "When first we realized you were traversing our territory, we thought to attack. But when we saw that you simply passed onwards without attempting to settle worlds that were not yours, I desired to know why."
"I knew that to despoil such beautiful worlds would be wrong," said Fulgrim.
"It would have been wrong," agreed Eldrad. "These maiden worlds have been awaiting the coming of my people for eons. To try and take them from us would have been a grave mistake."
"Is that a threat?" asked Fulgrim.
"A promise," warned Eldrad. "You have displayed a restraint we have not come to expect from your race, Lord Fulgrim. After all, you are led by a warrior known as the War Master, and your aim is to conquer the galaxy for your own kind, regardless of the sovereignty or desires of the races with which you share it. I do not mean to antagonize you when I say that this is monstrously arrogant."
Solomon expected Fulgrim's anger to be incandescent, but the Primarch merely smiled and said,
"I am no expert on history, but did your race not once claim to have ruled the galaxy?"
"Claim? We did rule it once, and it was thanks to our arrogance and complacence
that we lost it. But do not ask of such things again, for I will speak no more of those lost days.
Fair enough, said Fulgrim. Empires rise and fall. Civilizations come and go. For each it is tragic, but it is the way of things. One dynasty must die for another to rise and take its place. You cannot deny the human race its manifest destiny to rule the stars as you once did.
Manifest destiny? Laughed Eldred. What does your race know of destiny? When things transpire in your favor, you believe it to be destiny. But when you suffer disaster, is that not also destiny? Who says destiny must be a good thing? I have seen sights that would make you curse destiny, and I know secrets that would shred your sanity, were you to know but a fraction of them.
Solomon felt the rising tension between the two leaders and knew that sooner or later this must end in blood. Clearly the Phoenix Guard were readying themselves for battle, and Solomon could see in the minute movements of the sword-armed Eldar that they too sensed the escalation of words. Instead of violence, Fulgrim simply laughed at Eldrad's words as though he were enjoying the confrontation.
We are a pair, are we not? Needling at one another and fencing around the real issue. And what is the real issue? Asked Eldred.
Why, we are even speaking at all. You claim the worlds in this region are yours, but you have not settled them.
Why? Your race fades, yet you cling to life aboard a starship when there are paradises awaiting you. You want more from us than simply to shepherd us away from your territories, so let us be honest with one another, Eldred Ulfran of Craft World Ulfway. Why are we sitting opposite one another?
Very well, Fulgrim of the Emperor's Children. But I tell you now that you will not want to hear the real reason I desired to speak with you.
No?
Eldred shook his head sadly.
No, for it will anger you greatly.
You know this, do you? Asked Fulgrim. I thought you said you were no witch.
I need no powers of foresight to know my warning will anger you.
Tell me your warning, and I will consider it objectively, promised Fulgrim.
Very well, said Eldred. At this very moment, the one you call War Master lies in death's shadow, and there are forces beyond your comprehension battling for his soul.
Horus, cried Fulgrim. He is injured.
He is dying, nodded Eldred.
How? Where? Demanded Fulgrim.
On the world of Davin, said Eldred. A trusted counselor betrayed him, and now the powers of chaos whisper lies wrapped in truth into his ears. They feed his vanity and ambition with a distorted vision of things yet to come.
Will he live? Cried Fulgrim, and Solomon heard anguish like nothing he had heard before.
He will, but it would be better for the galaxy were he to perish, said Eldred.
Fulgrim slammed his fist down on the table, smashing it in two, and surged to his feet. His pale features blazed with anger. The Phoenix Guard lowered their halberds as the armored Eldar warriors flinched at his sudden rage. "You dare wish the death of my dearest friend?" roared Fulgrim. "Why?"
"Because he will betray you all and lead his armies against your Emperor," said Eldred. "In one fell swoop he will condemn the galaxy to thousands of years of war and suffering."